From the four corners of Southern California, this is The Hot Seat, and you're in it with me, Max Schwartz. It starts right now. It's great to be back with you. I hope every member of the listening audience voted on Election Day. On the phone, I have author and former Los Angeles Mayor Richard Reardon. How are you, Mayor Reardon? Thank you very much for taking the time to call into The Hot Seat today.
Well, thank you very much, Max.
My pleasure. And before I start, I want to give some background. Mr. Reardon was mayor of Los Angeles from 1993 to 2001. He founded the Reardon Foundation in 1981 and is also the owner of the beloved restaurant, The Pantry. Not to mention, Mayor Reardon is an author whose book, The Mayor, is currently available. I will be asking him about some of the topics covered in his book in addition to the hard questions. Now that all of the background is out of the way, I have lots of questions and not a lot of time, so without further ado, let's get started. So if you could, would it be possible to tell me a little bit about your book?
Yeah, it's not a long book, but essentially it tells about my life as a young child, in school, and then as mayor of Los Angeles. So hopefully it doesn't bore anybody because it's very short. But I think I've tried to tell all, be very honest, where things were not going particularly well in my life, and also when things were going well.
Okay. And on that note about it being very short and only covering certain topics, I read James Rainey's review of your book, and he wasn't too kind, to put it politely. Do you believe that do you have a grudge, or do you believe the LA Times has a grudge against you?
Well, it depends. I think Jim Rainey, fortunately for me, just has never liked me. And in the book, I mentioned about an article he had in the L.A. Times. It was printed on the front page of the L.A. Times, and I was running for office saying that I might be a racist. And what he picked that up from was an interview by a Dallas newspaper woman who had a long interview on me, and on the back page of the interview mentioned that knocking on doors, I went into the house of this 90-year-old woman, and in the middle of talking to her, she said, "Gee, those black people are terrible." And my response was, "Well, a few of them are terrible." Now, I should have gone on, and then a few whites are terrible, and a few Asians are terrible. But Rainey took it as though it was just a throwaway line in the article by the reporter that reported it. Rainey had it as a headline and the main part of an article to, in effect, tell people don't vote for Richard Reardon because he's a racist. And that's where, I'm not going to criticize what he said, because somebody says, excusez-moi. To excuse yourself is to accuse yourself. But I will say the one thing is, within the L.A. Times, and within the newspaper industry, everybody's critical of him because if you are trying, if you're a reporter who reported on an article done by a writer, in this case Jim Rainey, that should never be the writer who does a review of your book. It's just not proper in the newspaper industry. But leaving that alone, I think it lowers me by trying to defend myself as to what was said in the article.
Now, when you were in office, did the LA Times give you a hard time as well?
Yeah, they did too many times. Another time, it was right after I was in office, but a reporter came up to me. He was actually following me around for a couple of days to see what I was doing. And then he said, we've had rumors that you have the early stages of Alzheimer's. What do you say? And I said, as far as I know, I don't. So the article has in there, Reardon denies having early stages of Alzheimer's, which would suggest to a lot of readers that maybe he does have it. And certainly to me, it was a very unethical way to do it. Another thing they had was right after I was mayor, I was on the board of the Metropolitan Transit Association, and they had a long budget. I don't know if it was 1,000 items or what. A month or two after I was elected and on the board of the MTA. And in the middle of all that, unbeknownst to me, was a relatively small contract with a company that I had a lot of stock in.
Oh.
Called Tetra Tech, which is a leading water engineering company in the world. And what it happened is my predecessor, Tom Bradley, had approved the contract before I was mayor. And I approved the budget, which included that. Not the greatest scandal in the world. Maybe it's something that said we should have done a better job of checking things. But the Times, in more than one article, referred to it as a scandal.
Shouldn't you have looked at it?
Didn't make them exactly my favorite newspaper.
Shouldn't you, in that particular case, though, shouldn't you have looked and made sure that there was, make sure you didn't have any conflicts of interest?
Well, after that, you know, we did it. We hired people full-time. It costs a fortune when you're mayor because you're involved in so many hundreds and thousands of things. So we really, I mean, it was very expensive and time-consuming to keep track of it, but we actually did a good job after that.
Okay. And I want to go back to the book. And so why did you decide to have it released, and why did you write it so recently, even though you've been out of office since 2001?
Well, you know, I've been teaching leadership at the UCLA Anderson School of Management. And in it, I talk about the axioms of leadership. I'll go through it quickly. Courage. There's a courage and the courage to admit when you make mistakes. Courage to get things done, caring about everybody you meet, from the janitor to the president of a company, and learning from them. Third, empowering others, maybe the most important. Surround yourself with excellent people and empower them to get things done. And give them credit, don't take it yourself. The next is relentless pursuit of goals. Be a closer. Anything comes to you, make it happen. My favorite, I guess you'd call it rabbi, is Hillel, the Jewish rabbi who said, if not now, when? If not me, who? And I think you have to think that way. You get things done. Don't wait for everybody else. And then the last one, which I question my class and everybody else on, is sense of humor. Can you teach people a sense of humor?
Okay, but why did you wait until now? Is it because you've had time to reflect on all those maxims?
Yeah, it was time to reflect on it, and it takes a long time to write a book. And I actually did write a book earlier, and I didn't like it at all. So I threw it away, and I had to start over again. But I do think that people have read it can see, you know, what it really takes to be a strong leader, a strong manager. Is something where you see people like George W. Bush and Obama who had no management ability.
Okay. And continuing on now, you were mayor during a volatile time for the state of California, or your terms just preceded that time. How did this factor into your ability to govern, and what did you do to keep the public's trust?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, people should know, in the early 90s, late 80s, was the first economic recession that Los Angeles ever had. We had the Rodney King riots then. The rest of the country had sold L.A. short. The people in L.A. were depressed. And what I did was, of course, I ran on the motto, tough enough to turn L.A. around. But I also did it with my axiom. And particularly, you know, we on courage, we said, it's much easier to get forgiveness than permission. So just do it. And we got to the earthquake, the Northridge earthquake, about 6 months after I became mayor. And that became my motto then. I said, don't wait for the city, the federal government, the state, or others to do anything. Just go do it. And if anybody complains, ask for forgiveness.
Okay.
One example I give in the book is after when the earthquake happened, 5 bridges broke down around the city and on the freeways of the city. One of them over La Cienega on the Santa Monica Freeway. And I found out that the only detour around that really worked had three intersections going through Culver City. And I was told that it would take about a year because they'd have to have the state make a study of it, some private company make a study, they have to get the city councils and the mayor of each city together, et cetera, et cetera. And I told Bob Yates, our head of transportation, you have 5 minutes to take over those intersections. And this was early in the morning. And I said, if anybody complains, here is my home number. I literally gave my home number. Give them my home number. They can call me, and I'll ask for forgiveness. You know, nobody ever called.
Okay. So I'd like to move on. Thank you for that little anecdote. I'd like to move on now to the election because we're getting very short on time. So now that the election dust has settled, I'd like to ask you about the superintendent's race. As a former Secretary of Education for the state of California, do you think the position of state superintendent is worth all of the commotion made by the Torlakson and Tuck campaigns, especially the latter?
Yes and no. I mean, superintendent has some independence of the legislature and the governor in California. It doesn't have as much power as I sure would like to see it have. And I'm glad it became a very tight race because both of those people, Tom Turkson, whom I supported and won, I think has done an excellent job. But Marshall Tuck is a good friend of mine, and I think he would have done a great job too.
Do you believe that what's happening with charter schools, their increase in popularity, and do you believe that what's going to happen with teacher tenure through the court system, do you think that either of those would be affected by whoever superintendent?
No, I don't think they will have a major effect on them because basically it's about the legislature in Sacramento and the unions. The unions have controlled the legislature and the thought, both in the local school board and in the state legislature. And they require tenure. They make it really impossible to fire an incompetent teacher. And that's where charter schools, the principal of the school, can fire somebody who's incompetent and therefore gives the best education to young children that they could possibly have. And the record of the charter schools, like L.A. County is the best in the country, where they have like 95% of the children go on to four-year colleges, compared to about 8% in the school district, regular public school district.
I have to just interrupt you right there because we're getting short on time, and I do want to ask a follow-up question. Do you believe that tenure should be eliminated?
Yeah, I think tenure doesn't belong in lower grades. And I don't think it belongs even in the colleges anymore. It certainly did at one time. I mean, particularly when the right-wing ringers had total control of the colleges and everybody, and it was impossible for a liberal to get tenure in or whatever it is in the colleges. But now it's been the other way around. The liberals have total control of the teachers in the colleges. And
I don't know if it's necessarily to say all liberals, though.
Well, you know, I think let me switch gears because I consider myself a liberal. But I think there's a difference between a liberal and a progressive. People come to me every day almost and say, why aren't you a Democrat, Dick Reardon? You believe in everything the Democrats do. I say, because I'm not liberal. I am liberal. Because I am liberal, and Democrats are not liberal. What do you mean by that? Because you support teachers' unions who do not care about poor young children.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily to categorize all liberals in that light, but I do understand where you're coming from. And
well, I am. Maybe you call it a libertarian or something, but I am. Well, I don't call liberals that. I call Democrats have to stop voting for teachers unions. By the way, this last election, they started to do that. This last election was a real slap in the face to the teachers union.
Okay. Why is that, in your opinion?
I think people are waking up to the fact that our children in our country are not getting a good education.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that, and we'll be right back after this short music break, and at which time I will be asking Mayor Reardon about contemporary Los Angeles. And welcome back to The Hot Seat. I'm Max Schwartz, here with my calling guest, former Los Angeles Mayor Richard Reardon. So, Mr. Reardon, we only have a little bit of time left, so I'd like to ask a few questions about contemporary Los Angeles. What are your opinions regarding the functioning of the city council?
Well, let me just back off a little bit. L.A. is rapidly becoming gentrified. And essentially, there is becoming less and less housing for the working poor in Los Angeles. And is this good or is this bad? If you look at Royal Heights, Lincoln Heights in the east part of the city, if you look at Eagle Rock, at Echo Park, at Silver Lake, in the west part of the city, it's a major change that I think is having a big effect on L.A. Now, what do I think of the city council? I think, again, what you have is a problem that the unions have controlled the city council for a long time. And when it's the unions deciding what the votes are going to be, it's bad for the city. Now, I think one by one, I like each of the city councilmen one by one. And they do care. But it's a real problem for them to vote against the union. The liberals like Mike Bowden, he's very liberal, but he's brilliant and he gets things done. But then when it comes down to voting for what the unions want, it's the problem.
Okay, and I want to go back to your point about gentrification. What would you do to change that? Do you support having low-income housing in all new property developments in Los Angeles, or how would you go about fixing that?
Well, the question would take forever to answer. Because, quite honestly, the affordable housing, having a section of every development set aside for so-called poor people, we've had that for a long time, and it hasn't worked. You get that 10% or whatever it is of the units, it's the relatives of the politicians, the relatives of real estate developers, others like that. It gets ridiculous. I know in one where the parents of a billionaire, because the parents were, quote, poor, the billionaire, of course, was rich, but they got affordable housing. So if you wanted to have affordable housing, you'd have to have a whole section for affordable housing and not part of some other development.
Okay. And how would you rate Mayor Garcetti's performance up to this point?
Well, I think Mayor Garcetti is brilliant, very articulate. I think he's going to go on to bigger things like senator, maybe president someday. I don't think he is a good manager. I think he has to learn that to really be a great mayor. He hasn't surrounded himself with very excellent people, weak people to a great extent. And he doesn't get things done. So I'm betting on him for the long run. I think he's a little weak in the short run. Jim Newton had an article about 2 months ago on the first 6 months of Mayor Garcetti, and it pretty much, in a much nicer way, said what I just said.
And it's interesting that you brought up that point, because it seems, at least to some in the public view, that all he's doing is in terms of his public schedule and what he's doing in Los Angeles and what he gets involved with, it seems like all he's doing is getting himself prepared to run for bigger office.
I think that's true.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that, Mayor Reardon. And
okay, Max. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure to have you on. And you can meet Mayor Reardon, ask him your own questions, and ask him to sign your copy of his book Saturday, November 22nd from 4 to 6 at Chevalier Books on Larchmont. Thank you very much for joining me again, Ms. Mayor Reardon. It was a pleasure. The Hot Seat After Hours starts right now. You can email the Hot Seat inbox at thehotseatwithmaxschwartz @gmail.com, or you can tweet me at MaxSchwartzTV. Feel free to contact me about anything Hot Seat or politics related. I would love to discuss the election results with you one-on-one. You can subscribe to the Hot Seat's newsletter by clicking on our page, go to annenbergradio.org/podcast, and click on the link underneath the Hot Seat's description and enter your email address. Thank you for listening to the Hot Seat. We'll be back next week with California State Senator Ted Lieu, which will be the last episode of the semester. Good day.